And the time is now 18 minutes to 9 o'clock. Good morning to you. Time to get our Cropover conversation started. To continue, as I said, today we're going to go a little deeper into the festival. Let's say good morning to our friends at the NCF facilitating this conversation this morning. And I have a legend on the line today, the Mighty Destroyer. He is joining us today. And also the Deputy Director of the Barbados Museum, Mr. Kevin Farmer, is with us as well. Good morning. How are you doing? How are you doing, Kevin? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Good morning.
Hi. Nice to have you on board. Now, I think we're going to start with you, Kevin, because we really want to get into the origins of the festival. I think now that they don't have anything going on really festival-wise this year, we take a time now to reflect, to look back, because a lot of people are saying, okay, how do we go forward from here? We've gotten this far. We know we were on a trajectory, but I think very often we forget how the festival started, where it started, why it started. So I'm hoping you can enlighten some of our listeners.
I hope so too.
I'm sure you're the right guy. I mean,
the history of the festival really starts with enslavement, of course, and the utilization of particular festivals brought by enslaved Africans to Barbados, and recognizing that these people would have come from different parts of West Africa. Mm-hmm. So Senegambia up in the south, all the way to the Congo down in the north, and being brought to a place, some of them not, of course, can't speak the same language, and evolving out of that particular traditions. And as early as the, say, 1640s, late 1640s, persons, Europeans, are witnessing enslaved Africans dancing and playing music. And in some cases, because they have no idea what this is, they will call the music noise, or say that the dance is a little bit too sensuous or lascivious. But that slowly evolved, even to the point where drums were banned. They still found other methods to still play music. There are accounts of persons basically beating the mouth of jars to create a particular song.
This sounds very much like what happens now. This sounds very much like something that we are experiencing.
It is. Some traditions don't change. You find an instrument or an object that can have a beat, play a little percussion, and from there things will happen. But then what then occurred was that the British then in the 18th century introduced something called Home Harvest Festival, which was always celebrated at the end of the sugarcane season. And they, in some cases, would pay roving bands of enslaved musicians and some free black musicians to play in a plantation yard for the enslaved. And these would actually extend into late night, early morning. And of course, this is all done on a Sunday. So imagine that 52 Sundays in a given year, you're having some form of music and dance and people getting together on various plantations on a Sunday afternoon. And this is what is happening. That slowly gets curtailed after emancipation, because all of a sudden now Sunday becomes a day that we're trying to convert people. And if you're converting people, then the thing that's pulling them away, you're going to say, no, that's bad for you. Can't do that. And hence why we talk about, our grandparents, because most of us are a bit too young, don't play that banjo in my house. But that's where that comes from. Because all of a sudden, the influence of the church is, that which you've been doing for about 200 years is a bad thing. But if you want to believe in God and believe in what we believe in, then that's something that you don't do. So then you get these particular sayings. But the festival still exists. You still have home harvest, still have people celebrating at the end of the crop. And slowly this evolves, this harvest festival. It dies out a little bit after the end of World War II. But because of tourism, it is then rejuvenated and given a new name, Kadument. Versus if you look back at the records, people talk about Tadument. We now talk about Kadument. And then Kadument is not simply just about the jump up. It's not one day. It's almost a month or a month and a half where we get a chance to explore part of our cultural identity through dance and music.
All right.
Because then, of course, you've got Calypso forming part of the festival and part of the festivities. So we've always got to remember the early origins. And it would be interesting at some point in time if we were to seek to recreate one of those old bands using drums made from goat skin, using drums where an entire tree is felled and you simply put a slit in the middle and you play as percussion, the same jars, kettle drums, the use of fiddles. It would be interesting to see what that sounds like and try to recreate. Unfortunately, we've lost a lot of the dances.
Mm-hmm.
So one can argue that waka, as we know it, is but a small piece of a dance that we've lost.
What else have we really lost? I mean, there's so much. And because we have a situation where people are saying, well, it's not a cultural festival anymore. It's just about the parties and effects.
Let's call that evolution. Because one would argue that the 52 times a year in which people got together on a Sunday, it was what party and fete, is what catching it with people you haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
You might have included some stick licking and speechy fine within that. Someone would have cooked some food. So it's how is it evolving and how do we, in its evolution, still try to maintain some of what it began with so people understand where did this festival come from?
Mm-hmm.
How are we evolving it? And at the same time, still staying true to some of that heritage that allowed it to be created.
Now, I want to bring in Destroyer at this time. You're still there, sir?
Yes, I am, bro.
Yeah. Now, when we talk about evolution, we've got to talk about the music. And you won the crown, but that was in the 70s, and you've seen the development of the festival. And at home, you will see it as well, because your daughter is not a part of this festival, part of the entertainment scene. What would you say are the major changes, and are there positive changes for the development of the festival and the music?
Yes, I am seeing some changes, and some good, some bad. Music evolves, I know that for sure. Because as an entertainer and as a calypsonian, I have been watching a number of genres of music that has made a little change. The thing is that, though, even if you're going to, because people like to do a lot of fusions and so, my thing is that you still cannot take away the basic of a calypso and still call it calypso. You have to call it another name. I remember
Oh, looks like we just lost Destroyer. Are we going to try to get him a little later? But he was talking about the music, Kevin. He was talking about...
Yes.
This is the argument that we've heard so many times. He said, but this is not Calypso. You know, and we hear this here ever so often. I think we're hearing it even more often now. Now that the world is smaller because we have access to so... much more, you know, so we hear more, we see more, so it's easier to get that influence. But is that outside influence in our music in particular, is that influence aiding or is it hindering our festival?
I honestly don't think I'm justly qualified to even get into this particular pond because I can't swim that well.
Uh-huh.
But if we were to listen to, as Destroyer said, he sang in the 70s, if we go back 30 years to guys like Charmer, they sound different.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back further back to early recordings of Shillane and a Froggy, they sound completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So then we've got to ask, what then is Calypso? Is it the social commentary? Is it keeping to a particular beat? What then allows for some evolution and transition? Because think about it. If not for Calypso, we won't have soca. So genres evolve. It's like talking about there's jazz and there's blues, but then there's modal jazz and there's West Coast jazz and all these different things, but they all still fit under the wider rubric of jazz. So that's maybe, in fact, there's calypso, and then as the umbrella, and then there are these different genres of calypso being called different things, and of course being influenced. We don't live in a vacuum. We can't live in a vacuum, because then how then do we grow? The argument you can ask is the social commentary, because you get some fairly fast, let me say, soca sounding songs, which have some serious social commentary in them. So it's interesting, and it's interesting how it's evolving, where we have different influences depending on where you are, different musical instruments, and then different people who then bring different influences as well, but still mooring it or anchoring it to a particular tradition. And in this instance, the particular tradition is about the social commentary. The fact that you are free to critique the society in which you live.
Exactly. And basically, they are storytellers. They are. And when you listen to a song, it takes you back. For those that experienced it before, let's say when we had the 8% cut and you listen to songs from back then, you know, it reminds you of what happened back then. When you listen to songs from 1994 or so, when we had the change of government, you know, all the songs about Sandy, you know, so it takes, they tell a story. And I think that's the important part, that they continue to tell the story. Now, we have to take a break for opportunity calls, but when we come back, I want to delve into really what separates Cropover from what the other carnivals are, because
Cropover is not a carnival. We'll talk about that.
Speak for days, huh? Kevin Farmer, he is the deputy director of the Barbados Museum, and I'm going to try to get the Mighty Destroyer back on the line as well to join in the conversation. Cropover conversation, we will continue in just a few minutes, just after 9 o'clock. We are indeed the voice of Barbados. The time is now, it's just about 30 seconds to 9 o'clock. Let's get back in there. Our Cropover conversation, we have Kevin Farmer. He is a deputy director of the Barbados Museum. And we have him back on the line, former Calypso monarch, the Mighty Destroyer. Good morning. Are you with us, Destroyer?
Yes, I am. Sorry about what happened just now. Yeah, you call it a drop over here.
It's all right. Technology, it works for you and it works against you. That's quite right. Now, Mr. Farmer, before we left, I posed a question. I asked, how does Cropover differ from the other carnivals? What separates us from the other carnivals?
I'll argue it's about origin. Most of the other carnivals are, in fact, Christian-themed carnivals. That might sound funny. They're all based on what takes place just prior to Lent. So you have, so they're Lenten carnivals, and you have these all around the world, from Venice and Italy all the way back down to us in the Caribbean. So a lot of those countries which were heavily Roman Catholic, you have a festivity maybe a day or 2 days before Ash Wednesday. Mardi Gras is the same, where you basically do whatever you want. And then on Wednesday, you go to church, pray for forgiveness, because you've basically exorcised all those ghosts. You've done all the bad that you can do. You ask God for forgiveness. And then from there, you move into the period of Lent, where you seek absolution. Cropover is based on our version of Cropover, as it change, is based on a harvest festival. It is about agriculture. It is about the ending of a crop, as opposed to the activity tied into the church. And that is the major difference. And then the different, I would say, characters, some of which we've lost, some have evolved in certain ways. Like the Shaggy Bear. Yeah. The Shaggy Bear was actually made out of banana shag. So that when the mask wearer moved, not only were you seeing movement, but you were hearing that movement.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, it was scary. And for others, it might have been interesting.
Yeah.
But now we've moved to a Shaggy Bear that's all cloth.
Cloth,
so you see movement, you hear nothing except the music playing. So those little evolutions, maybe we should have a day where we bring back a traditional or historic crop over so people can have that visual understanding of where the festival actually began and how it has evolved. That might be interesting. I mean, in a way, it happens in Trinidad with Candomblé, where they seek to bring back the more traditional characters so you understand the early foundations of what that carnival is. It'd be interesting in Barbados if we go back and do the early foundational underpinnings of what crop over was, what that to-do-ment was all about.
How do you think that there is enough education about the history of the festival? And in the festival itself, does it feature enough of what brought it to this stage?
I think we're getting there. And I'm saying that because the Barbados Museum Historical Society and the National Cultural Foundation over the last 2 years, 2 to 3 years, have been within the season of crop over, been doing educational programming and have exhibitions. And we will continue that because we think that there is that need.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps it needs to go beyond just crop over, but let's deal with what we have right now.
Yeah.
That during that period, which is about 3 months, we can begin to educate as well as entertain Barbadians about what the early history of our crop over festival was.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in there begin to tease out some of the memories of persons' early understanding of when they first saw a crop over, or might have worked in a barn house, or it might just be persons old enough that might remember it in and around a plantation yard in their particular parish.
Yeah.
And the characters that were created, the musicians, the singers, even some of the food that was eaten, even that has changed. But all of that makes
that's my topic there.
Food.
Oh yeah. That's definitely so.
Definitely. That's a different program. We could talk about food.
That's a whole day. But yeah, Destroyer. Nice to have you back online.
We're
speaking about the music aspect, and Kevin said, "We know that this is not my pool. This is not where I swim." So let's go to the swimmer here. Now we talked about the evolution of the music. Now one of the major features of the festival is competition, and I know you heard the discourse, you know, whether it's relevant, is it helpful? I'd like to know what's your take on it, having competed and won a couple of times, and seeing how it's gone from, you know, just the Calypso competition to now having the Soca Monarch competition and so many other elements, you know. What's your stance? What's your take on competition and its relevance to the festival?
Let me just say, Kathy, I had always believed in competition.
Mm-hmm.
Competition is in every aspect of music. There's some kind of competition, sports, whatever whatever. When you look around, there is some aspect of competition. So I don't see why we would want to take the competitive aspect out of Calypso, out of crop over period. Let me just go back. I remember in 1974, when crop over was revived, and this was done as a result of the lower period of tourism, and they decided that we have to do something to get people coming, and this was and it used to be in June, yeah? And the board of tourism, tourism board at the time, they decided to revive crop over. As Kevin said, this was something that used to go on before at the end of the crop.
Mm-hmm.
And so crop over was revived. The thing is that when it was revived in 1974, there was no calypso competition. There was just like folk music going around the plantations. I remember I myself, as a member of Sing Up Barbados, going and performing at some of these shows at the plantations and on Broad Street. Broad Street used to be shut off, and we have it, all activities in Broad Street. Like I said, it was folk music. And so I looked at that because I was singing calypso all of that time. You know, I started singing calypso in 1973. And I kept telling myself, we need to have a festival to identify calypso with. And so that festival came about. The thing is that there was no competition. So what we did, myself and Dragon, we went to speak to a guy called Julian Marishaw, who was the person who was kind of chairman of the Cropover Board, or I think he called it, you know. Anyhow, and we spoke to him about getting the competition into the festival, because we figured that once you have the music, that competitive aspect of the music, you create that interest, and that will be able to have to drive the festival. And that is exactly what happened. So like I said, and I know people look forward to the competition. I hear some people who have been former kings saying, take the competitive aspect out of it. I see that as being selfish, because some of these folks, and I'm being real now, lots of these folks made it as a result of the same competition. So don't try to cut down the limb that you passed on, sat and stood on. That's my aspect of it. Yes, there are some movements in what we originally called calypso, from what is happening now. Lots of fusions and so on. I have no problem with that. The thing is that, as Kevin would agree, certain aspects of culture must be held on to. And so I believe the authentic calypso, there's nothing wrong in still having that aspect of it. Don't throw it through the door. The others can come. The other genres of music can come. The fusions can come. But just remember, we still have to maintain the actual calypso where people know it as people know it. And people really still enjoy that form of calypso. So I continue to say yes. Keep that alive. Keep the competitive spirit going. With the calypso competition, it creates a lot of impact, and you can have whatever else you want in there. If you want to have other competitions, as they're doing now with Bashment and soccer. Nothing wrong with that. There are different avenues, so that's what I'm saying. Just make sure, though, that we do not just kill what we would consider authentic calypso.
I think perhaps that could actually be a play to so many different aspects of the festival,
where you welcome
additions, because let's be real, we are in a competitive environment and we are competing. I mean, at this time of year, there's Vinci Mass, there is St. Lucia Carnival, Spice Mass, Antigua, all in that small 2 month window as well. So we're competing. So that's will add elements to bring others in. But I understand what you're saying, where you don't lose what brought you so far. You don't lose the original elements.
Right. No. I would not be in agreement with that at all. Never mind, I don't compete now, but I still like to know that.
well, that being said, now, you won in a one-song competition.
No.
It was two men you won?
Yeah, two songs. A song Come Together.
Oh, yes.
And Crop Over Back and Out.
Okay.
And that was that. And just for the record, Kathy.
Yeah.
It's on the NCS website where it is said that I won my first calypso competition at Culloden Farm. That's incorrect. I won my first calypso competition at the Marine House.
Oh, okay.
Marine House, 1975. It was Marine House.
You won in 1975.
75 at Marine House.
Well, you know, we do have the air of the NCF, and I'm pretty sure that they will make that change.
Yes, I've been trying to get people to understand so that they can make that change. For years now, it has not been changed. But I would love to have that change because I never sang a calypso competition at Culloden Farm. Yes, I used to sing at Culloden Farm, wrestling on Barbados, but not not in a calypso competition.
All right, well, that's very important because obviously, as we try to share the information, and I appreciate what the NCF has done on their website, where they share the information.
Right
on. You can see the history of the winners in the various competitions, as well as update you. So it's important to get the correct information out.
Indeed. Yes, and for the records again, let me just say that I am myself and Dragon went and we spoke to Julian Marishaw, encouraging him to put Calypso in Crop Over.
What did you see after the inclusion of the competition element in Crop Over? How did it really help the festival to grow from there?
Well, first thing, you had the music. You had the music to help to drive the festival. That is what we had been seeing from very far. I don't forget all the other islands had carnival. We had discontinued carnival. So there was a group of us out there singing calypso, but nothing to help to drive us. You know, we have a calypso competition here, calypso competition there, but nothing to help to drive it because there was no festival. So when Crop Over came, it was definitely what we needed. And so the guys started to compose, and we did done some recordings. Some was taped. And another thing that was good is when CBC started to come to the tents and record the songs and play, and was able to get airplay. That is what helped to drive the festival.
It definitely is elements like that there, and you mentioned the inclusion of the media, CBC,
for sure. CBC did come in, obviously, we had Radio Fusion, and VOB, can't leave them out. I've done a number of interviews there with the stations, both Radio Fusion and VOB, with my boy Larry Mays and others,
All right. Now, Kevin, I have a WhatsApp message here. It says, Kevin Farmer mentioned bands of roving slaves in the plantation. I have an 1821 plantation register that has musical as a line under slave expenses. It does not indicate whether it was for a religious or secular event, just musical. Wondering if he's ever seen this and what he thinks. We are enslaved musicians in payroll.
I've never seen it. I'd be very interested in seeing it because it then shows you, in a way, the realization amongst the planters that there was a need to make provision for some form of leisure activity. But also remember that planters held their own parties. And they would have utilized enslaved musicians to play for their parties. But to see it actually noted within a plantation ledger is quite interesting. I will ask that person to take my number, 832-5323. 832-5323. And to WhatsApp me, because I would love the opportunity to see that ledger. I think that's most interesting.
Do you get a lot of members of the public sharing their private memorabilia, things that they have, especially from the plantations?
Sometimes we do, yes. Especially if we have a particular exhibition or programming activity. What we would do is to do some early teasers on our social media pages. And you get persons calling up, say, oh, I have this. And we would ask to see it, and if we think it's interesting, we will ask them for permission to either photograph it or to have the actual object in our exhibitions. Because it's amazing the things that Barbadians collect.
Someone's asking if you
how
have a
that helps to tell, tell how that helps us to tell our story.
Someone's asking if you have a picture of the old Shaggy Bear.
Not quite. We have an old picture of someone dressed as what we would call Mother Sally, which for some scholars like Dr. Burroughs will note that that person is called the Bank Holiday Bear, who dressed up as a man dressed as a woman with, you know, large buttocks and everything. But as for Shaggy Bear, we don't have an early picture. What we have are written accounts of mm-hmm. what the Shaggy Bear character looked like. So that's how we could tell you that it was made from Banana Shag.
Now, you mentioned working with the NCF and trying to bring some of those past elements back. Are you able to comment on how those discussions are going, the possibility of having something like that there? Well, nothing this year, but...
We're working on something this year.
Ah.
But I'll let that be revealed a little bit later. But we are working on something this year that people can go and it'd be a lot more interactive and online, because it's important.
Yes.
Because what I will say to Destroy, the other good thing about Calypso, and even as you said earlier, is it captures a particular historical moment. Mm-hmm. And I'll give this example. We know we'll call it a folk song, but it would have been a Calypso. Millie Gone to Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
I can't sing, so don't even ask me. but what that
I'm
what
sure you want me to worse.
Folk song captures. Oh no, trust me, I'm horrible. But what that folk song or what that Calypso, which because it lasted for so long and got passed down and became a folk song, does is capture a particular moment in time where this horrific murder took place, and the man tried to cover it up by saying that his wife had migrated to Brazil. In fact, the museum, in collaboration with the students at BCC last year or year before, we have something called Torch Lake Tours, where we recreated that. And in our research, we were able to find a photograph of the police sergeant who investigated that murder.
Wow.
Wow.
So here's something that's made for entertainment that captures a particular moment in time, but actually acts as a historic document that with a little diligence and a little luck, you can actually go back and find evidence of the persons who took part in what is being sung about. Mm. And that is what makes Calypso so interesting. Beyond the immediacy of critiquing what's happening now, it's going back 10, 20, and that's almost 100 years old, to recreate and understand what took place and how it then captured the public's imagination. Because that's the other thing. Calypso takes what is, for some people, the more topical or more interesting happenings in the day and allows for critique. And then allows you to replay them and have a discussion about them.
How are you making this palatable for a new generation? Some may look and say, museum and historical society? No, not past that, you know, onto TikTok or something. How do you maintain your relevance? Because for me, I'm lapping this all up, but I'm a nerd, so that doesn't matter. I mean,
nerds unite.
Yeah, but how do you make this here palatable for this new generation? Some that they say have an attention span of a goldfish.
That's really bad. Some have longer attention spans.
Okay,
but what we're doing, there you go. But what we're doing, in some instances, if you go to our Facebook page, we have something called Museum Minutes, where we simply using video to have discussions about things in the museum. Mm-hmm. We're rolling out a couple of content-driven activities. And this is later on, because the museum actually right now is in a process of conceptualizing what the new museum is going to look like through the IADB loan. We are going to be upgrading the museum in the next 2 years. We started a campaign asking Barbadians what they would like to see in the museum as we modernize it, as we allow it to become more technological, more interactive, so that we grab, as you said, people's short attention spans, but at the same time, utilizing ever technologies. For us, YouTube and Facebook, we might do something on TikTok, you never know, but to grab people's attentions, creating an app that allows people to tour, doing walking tours, the same Torchlight tours that I mentioned brought a whole new set of people who don't normally come to the museum, and mostly families.
Yes.
Because parents are looking for wholesome activities for their children to do in the afternoon when they're, you know, don't have to work. And there are not a lot of things out there. And we actually provided that type of entertainment and edutainment at the same time. Mm. But it's about tapping into the technology, finding the funders and sponsors who would enable us to utilize it to reach out to Barbadians, to discuss what's relevant to them. Mm. And I found that that has worked. And in fact, our lecture series is on Zoom, where we roll out some panel discussions using Zoom and other platforms like that. But the important thing is wanting to hear from Barbadians what they would like to see.
There you go. Now, we're getting ready to wrap things up, but Destroyer, I want to look at, because I mean, it's something that we've heard throughout the years. Yes, the music is integral to the festival, but there doesn't seem to be the respect given to the musicians. I know, as someone that's been in entertainment for so long, you would have seen and experienced somewhat
how
that goes. How can we get past this? Can we get past this hurdle? And what do you see for the musicians and the music industry, how they can continue to hold the festival up?
Let's be honest. What I find that we do from time to time, we sometimes people forget the builders. Mm-hmm. And if you, and I this is me, if you don't know where you come from, you wouldn't know where you're going. Mm-hmm. So always remember where you came from. This festival, it didn't just happen. A number of people over the years would have played their part and tried to build it. Some of who are here now will become just like myself and Gabby and so on, stalwart in the business. Mm-hmm. So we got to remember the same treatment that you want, give to others. Mm-hmm. Let's just try to remember who were the builders, and I'm not begging for anything now. Just remember, it's like any other thing. Remember the foundation. Mm-hmm. And also remember who is here now. Just give everybody who has something to do with the festival, because this is what they call a million-dollar festival. Mm-hmm. All of us play our part. Remember the people that are selling the things on the sidewalks. Mm-hmm. Could do all the artists, and I'm not just talking about calypsoners now. I'm talking about even the masqueraders. Everybody has to get that level of respect. So that we can drive this festival further from where it is. I mean, further up, not down. Yeah. Further up. We can bring some more money into this country. Because that is what was the original idea. And it has happened. It has brought in millions of dollars for this country.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we have to get ready to wrap things up. But anything, because I know this is a discussion that can continue all day, but apparently I have a time limit, and you know, there are other things that we have to do. But in wrapping up, anything that you want to share, start with you, Kevin.
At this point, I guess for me, because it's more about history and heritage, mm-hmm. Like the person who sent in the text, if you've got any interest in memorabilia, please share it with us so we can share it with wider Barbadian public as we delve more into the history of our festival. And we begin to educate people about our history of our festival. And I want to say thanks to Destroyer. It's nice meeting you like this. I look forward to meeting you in person someday. Yeah. And thank you for the information that you've shared.
Mm-hmm. Right on. You're welcome, bro.
And Destroyer?
Okay, like I said, we just like to keep the festival going. We have some young folks in there in the Calypso Arena. Let us continue to keep the competitive aspect of it alive, so that these youngsters would get the opportunity to be a Calypso king or queen further down the road.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Kevin Farmer. He is the deputy director of the Barbados Museum and the mighty Destroyer. Gentlemen, thank you very much. I must apologize the CEO of the NCF, Carol Roberts-Reefer. She wanted to join. Obviously, we had the program running earlier, and she had to go off to another meeting. So hopefully we can have Mrs. Roberts-Reefer on at a later date. But thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today.
Thank you, and all the best to everybody.
And thank you.
All righty. That was another Cropover Conversation. Thanks to the gentleman for joining us. And yes, it's now 27 minutes after 9 o'clock. I'm like a sponge. I'm trying to get all the information that I can. But if you want to catch the recordings of these interviews, you can go to our websites. This one will be up either by later today or tomorrow. Or you can go to our website, www.vob929.com, and you can catch all the past interviews that we've had here.